Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger responds to recent federal threats targeting sanctuary jurisdictions. That's after the Department of Homeland Security named nearly 400 counties, including Ulster, as non-compliant with immigration enforcement. Metzger explains what the designation means, how it affects local communities, and why New York officials are pushing back. It's Medicare Fraud Prevention Week. Medicare fraud costs billions each year, and it could be happening to someone you love. We speak with the New York Statewide Senior Action Council about how to take action before it's too late. Plus, Kerhonky-tonkin' in the field in Kerhonkston this weekend. And if honky-tonkin' isn't your cup of tea, we have a preview of First Friday Funk Takeover in Parksville. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Stocks open higher this morning despite a disappointing report on private payrolls. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 40 points in early trading.
The payroll processing company ADP, which handles paychecks for more than 25 million workers in the U.S., projects private employers added just 37,000 jobs last month, the smallest increase in more than 2 years. The ADP survey is a poor predictor of the official job tally from the Labor Department, which we'll get on Friday, but the low number still prompted President Trump to resume badgering Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell to cut interest rates. One reason the Fed's been reluctant to cut borrowing costs is uncertainty over Trump's tariffs and what they might do to inflation. The tariff on most imported steel and aluminum doubled today, which could affect the price of everything from washing machines to six packs of beer. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Billionaire Elon Musk is blasting President Trump's signature spending bill as a, quote, disgusting abomination. The remarks follow Musk's departure as head of the White House cost-cutting initiative. NPR's Bobby Allen has more.
In a post on X, Musk has escalated his attacks on President Trump's big, beautiful bill, which is awaiting a vote in the Senate. Musk writes the legislation is a, quote, massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill, saying the House lawmakers who passed it should be ashamed. The bill would cut taxes, boost military and border security spending, and slashes funding to Medicaid and clean energy programs. The Congressional Budget Office estimates the bill would add more than $2 trillion to the deficit. In a White House briefing, Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt said Trump knows where Musk stood on the bill, and that does not change Trump's opinion. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
Federal immigration agents have detained the family of the suspect in the Boulder, Colorado attack. The Homeland Security Secretary says authorities will investigate whether the suspect's wife or five children had any role in the fiery attack that injured 12 people. Federal authorities claim the suspect is illegally in the U.S. More people in the U.S. are dealing with air quality problems. Smoke from wildfires burning in Canada is traveling thousands of miles and spreading into multiple states. NPR's Kristen Wright has more.
Environmental officials in Iowa put out a statewide air quality alert, warning that bands of thick smoke from Canada are hanging over the state and elevating levels of unhealthy air. They're advising against being outside for too long. For days now, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and northern Michigan have also been dealing with air quality problems. Now add to the list Cleveland and parts of the East Coast, including most of Connecticut. There are also air concerns in the South, not from the Canadian wildfires, but rather the Sahara Desert. Winds are carrying a huge cloud of dust from Africa across the Atlantic and into the Gulf Coast and Southeast. Kristen Wright, NPR News.
It's NPR. The Justice Department says it has charged two Chinese researchers for allegedly attempting to smuggle a fungus into the U.S. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports the charges come as the Trump administration says it will revoke visas for Chinese students.
The two Chinese nationals are accused of smuggling into the U.S. a fungus that prosecutors say can be classified as a potential agroterrorism weapon. It causes head blight in wheat, barley, maize, and rice. Court papers say one of the defendants was a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Michigan. Last summer, her boyfriend, who is also a researcher, allegedly brought samples of the fungus into the U.S. during a visit from China. Court papers say he initially denied knowledge of the samples, but later acknowledged having them and said he intended to continue his research while in the U.S. The pair faced several charges, including conspiracy, smuggling, and false statements. One of the defendants is in custody. The other is believed to be in China. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
NPR has learned that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has ordered the U.S. Navy to strip the name of San Francisco politician and gay rights activist Harvey Milk from a naval warship. Milk was a Navy Reserve officer who saw action in the Korean War. He was assassinated in 1978. There is apparently a list of other possible name changes, including stripping ships of names for late Supreme Court Justices Thurgood Marshall and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Other possible name removals could include naval ships named for civil rights activists Harriet Tubman, Dolores Huerta, Cesar Chavez, and Medgar Evers. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One with the Capital One Saver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at MacFound.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Last Thursday, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security published a list of nearly 400 counties that they designated as so-called sanctuary jurisdictions that were non-compliant with immigration enforcement, including Ulster, Sullivan, and Orange counties. However, many counties on that list have pushed back. The DHS has since removed the list from its website after intense criticism from local officials. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar spoke with one of those local officials, Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger, about what it means to be a sanctuary city and the impact of these threats from the Trump administration on New Yorkers.
Why don't we start with the basics? The U.S. Department of Homeland Security published a list last Thursday called the Sanctuary Jurisdictions Defying Federal Immigration Law. And this initial list included many counties and cities, including Ulster County, as well as neighboring Orange and Sullivan counties. I think a good place for us to start is if you want to just explain what a sanctuary city is, how that's defined, and what it exactly means for Ulster County residents.
So I don't think that there is, you know, a definition per se of a sanctuary city or a sanctuary jurisdiction. And I haven't surveyed all of the different policies and memorializing resolutions or local laws that have been put in place at different county and local levels, you know, not just in New York, but across the country. But the, you know, the general sentiment, and, you know, this goes back to the first Trump administration. The general sentiment was, you know, that people have rights under the U.S. Constitution. Those rights under the U.S. Constitution are not for citizens. They are for people. They are inalienable and absolute rights as written in our Constitution. And I think, you know, communities were committed to safeguarding those rights for all of their residents. I can't speak for other communities. I can tell you that, you know, we have an executive order in place in Ulster County. It was actually put in place in 2019 by my predecessor, who's now our congressman, Pat Ryan. And essentially what this executive order, and it was in, you know, reaction to policies then, threats of, you know, rounding people up. And this, we wanted, the idea behind it is that basically saying, you know, our county is not going to and does not and will not collect information on people's immigration status or share information about residents' immigration status unless required by law to do so. And further that, and again, this goes back to the processes protected and established and protected under the Constitution, you know, the laws of the land in our country, that if federal immigration officials wanted to interview, detain, what have you, a person that was on county government property, they would have to provide a signed judicial warrant. And that's just process, right? So, and that's a guaranteed process. And that executive order is still in place in at least two places, references, you know, consistent with the law, consistent with federal law. So from where we stand, it is still consistent with federal law, you know.
Right.
So other communities, I think, have adopted similar policies. Now, this recent press release that was sent out by the Department of Homeland Security and that list that was published on their website, it actually is following up on an executive order issued by Trump on April 28th. Mm-hmm. This one is strengthening and unleashing America's law enforcement to pursue criminals and protect innocent citizens. And it has some very concerning provisions. Section 5, entitled Holding State and Local Officials Accountable, it says the Attorney General shall pursue all necessary legal remedies and enforcement measures and shall prioritize prosecution of any applicable violation of federal criminal law with respect to state and local jurisdictions whose officials willfully and unlawfully direct the obstruction of criminal law, including by directly and unlawfully prohibiting law enforcement officers from carrying out duties necessary for public safety and law enforcement, unlawfully engage in discrimination on civil rights violations under the guise of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives that restrict law enforcement activity or endanger citizens. So, first of all, in nowhere does this executive order actually define what a sanctuary jurisdiction is or, you know, what they are labeling as sanctuary jurisdictions violate federal law.
Right.
It's from where I sit, the executive order in place here, our policies here are fully consistent with federal law, are fully consistent with the Constitution. And we've gotten no letters, we've gotten no follow-up. I will say that I got this same list of counties and states, I'm presuming, received a letter in December. I received a letter from the America First Foundation, so Steve Miller's like legal organization, before this administration was in office, that essentially, you know, made these same threats. And, you know, it didn't carry anything because this is some private organization issuing this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, he's part of that administration. But, you know, again, there's no clear information on what exactly these communities, any of our communities, are doing wrong, because we're not doing anything wrong, you know.
I am curious, as you said, Ulster County is in full compliance with federal law. You also hadn't received any communication from the federal government prior to this list coming out. I'm curious what your initial reactions were when you did find out that Ulster County was on this list.
I was expecting that we would be because I had gotten that letter in December.
Right.
And it's all the same people. But what was interesting is, I mean, clearly, like, no one has looked at all of these jurisdictions. It's in their policies or anything. Like, nothing's actually been reviewed. And I really don't know how that original list was put together. It was many, many counties and local jurisdictions, including a number of jurisdictions that have explicitly said that they have gone on record in the past as saying that they are not sanctuary jurisdictions.
Mm.
And that includes neighboring Orange County and others. And so it was this really, there was really no rhyme or reason to the counties, the jurisdictions that were included on this list. And there was an enormous outcry, especially by counties, especially by jurisdictions that, are aligned with the immigration policies of the administration, you know, and were being characterized as, you know, out of compliance or what have you. So it caused a huge uproar. And actually, if you tried to go on that page now on the Department of Homeland Security's website, it's been removed. Another part of that same executive order that I think is quite concerning is Section 4 using national security assets for law and order. And it says within 90 days of the date of this order, so maybe in a week or so, the Attorney General and Secretary of Defense, in consultation with the Secretary of Homeland Security and heads of agencies as appropriate, shall increase the provision of excess military and national security assets in local jurisdictions to assist in state and local law enforcement.
Wow.
And again, this is not consistent with the Constitution. That is, military personnel are not supposed to be used for domestic policing. You know, we'll see what comes out on in response to this directive. But, there are very concerning aspects.
You know, as we discussed, the DHS, it seems to have removed this list from the website. It says page not found. But this list with cities and counties were published last week. And I'm just curious what you feel is important for residents in Ulster County to know that you want to remind folks of.
I think it's very important for residents to know that their county government is in full compliance with the law, with federal law, and that there is no basis for our county to be on a list that accuses us of otherwise. So I think that is very important for people to know. And that we are a county that believes strongly in following the rule of law and protecting the rights that are enshrined in the United States Constitution.
We've been chatting with Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger about sanctuary cities and counties. Jen, thank you so, so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
And thanks to Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, it only takes one phone call or a suspicious bill to put your Medicare benefits at risk. We'll explain how to guard against scams and protect your health and identity during Medicare Fraud Prevention Week. That's next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Today, science is on the threshold of a new era.
On the next Radiolab, we go on a quest to find
the essence of life.
Life.
The key we've been looking for.
Where you'd least expect it.
LSD.
Yeah, let's get the party going.
The Age of Aquaticus on the next Radiolab. This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Whether Radio Catskill brings a smile to your day, some inspiration, or a greater connection to the Catskills and Northeast PA, we're proud to be here with you. Federal funding, about $1.60 per person annually, helps keep these trusted services strong and accessible to everyone in our community. Learn how you can safeguard local public media stations like ours by visiting protectmypublicmedia.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This week marks Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, a nationwide effort to raise awareness about a problem that costs the federal program and its beneficiaries an estimated $60 billion every year. In New York, the statewide Senior Action Council is leading the charge through its Senior Medicare Patrol Program. Executive Director Maria Alvarez joins us now to explain how fraud happens, what warning signs to look for, and what steps older adults, caregivers, and the broader community can take to protect themselves and their loved ones. Maria, good morning.
Good morning, Tim, and thank you for having me on your show today.
Thanks for being here. And we've talked before about Medicaid fraud and the devastating impact it has this week, the first week of June, highlighting that. Help us understand just how big of a problem this is, both financially and personally for beneficiaries.
Well, like you had mentioned, Medicare fraud occurs when somebody, it could be a scammer, it could be, an institution, takes your information, your Medicare information, and uses it for services and materials and medical things that you didn't use or get or obtain. So it has gotten so prevalent that it has, like you said, it has gotten to $60 billion a year that it costs the taxpayer. So this week, what we're trying to do is join a national effort to prevent Medicare fraud. And what we're asking is for the entire community to take steps that will help, you know, thwart the scammers and help prevent Medicare fraud from happening to the beneficiaries.
We hear a lot about fraud, waste, and abuse these days. What are the most common types of Medicare fraud you're seeing right now in New York?
Well, in New York, we're seeing things such as a Medicare fraud dealing with your card. You might have people calling you on the phone offering you to get you a new Medicare card because of certain things. So they might say you will get you a plastic card because, you know, now they're sort of more paper cards. We'll give you a plastic card. We'll give you a card because your birthday is on now and we need to renew it. You know, they have, you know, in COVID they were giving you a card because of COVID. You know, what we want the public to know are two important things. One is that Medicare will never call you at your home or anywhere else. They will never call you. Medicare, Social Security, and the IRS famously do not call its beneficiaries. So if you hear somebody saying that they're from Medicare and calling you from Medicare, hang up the phone because it's not them. And then number two, you're not getting a new Medicare card. There's no the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services has said that they are not giving out any new Medicare cards under any circumstances, unless, of course, your number has been compromised, and then we can work on getting you a new number, but not a new card. If somebody ever calls you to say we can offer you a new card for whatever reason, it is not happening. It doesn't exist. And that person who's on the other line is not telling you the truth. So the best thing to do is hang up the phone.
And you're mentioning, again, three steps people can take and reminding folks: prevent, detect, report. Can we just walk through each of those for folks, too, as a reminder?
Yes. Well, prevention obviously would be the optimal way to make sure that this doesn't happen, right, in the first place. So the way that we prevent it is, number one, we guard our card. We treat our Medicare number and card as if it were our Social Security card or our credit card, right? We don't go around sharing it with everybody. So then when we get our Medicare statement notices every 3 months or the explanation of benefits that might come with your plan, it's very important to read them. To open them up, read them, because in those statements, it explains how your account, your Medicare account, has been charged for the last 3 months. So if you look at it and you see that there is a doctor, a hospital, a doctor's office, or any type of procedure or a durable medical equipment that they are charging you for, or your account for, and you don't recognize it, that happened, then you may have an issue with your Medicare card. Your number might be compromised. So that's the first thing. And then, so knowing how to read it is prevention. Then when you detect it, you see that that your card has been, your number might be compromised because you're seeing that the charges that you don't recognize on your statement. But then the important thing to do is to report it. So when you report that you might have concerns that you might have been a victim of fraud, you call either the Center for Medicare Medicaid Services, which is 1-800-MEDICARE. You could call your doctor's office or your plan to see, you know, to verify that these are not mistakes, it's not an error, right? That could very well be a billing error. But if you find that you're receiving, that all of these charges are fraudulent or that you did not receive them, then you can call us as well at 1-800-333-4374. We're the New York State Senior Medicare Patrol, and we are contracted through the federal government to assist the public in negotiating this system, right? It's, it could be very complex, but what we do is we have counselors who are very experienced, and we're not here to sell anything. We're just here to assist. So we are able to then to help people go through the system and assist them in sorting out whatever issue there might be.
You mentioned that you are contracted by the government there, and we've heard a lot about potential cuts to Medicare and Medicaid programs. Is that anything that would affect this program or any of the resources you provide, like the SMP hotline or the healthcare tracker?
Happily, no. We have been we are contracted with the government. We have been actually renewed for the new year, so there's no issue with that. And you could call us at any time, just like people have been calling us for the last 10 years.
Yeah, and you have partnered with organizations, community groups, professionals. Can other folks partner during this week or just in general with statewide to help with this effort to prevent fraud?
I think that the best thing to do in all of this, since we're talking about the Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, is that we need to be vigilant and we need to spread the word. So what we're asking for, and this should not just be in this week, it should be every single day, because while you and I are sleeping, these scam artists are working overtime to see how they're going to defraud the public. So this has to be an all hands on deck effort. So what we encourage is people to call us if you want. If there are other organizations that want information to be able to amplify the message, they could call us and we can give them information. You can go to our website, which is nyseenior.org, where we have all of the information about how to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud, waste, and abuse. We also make presentations in the community. Wherever they call us, we go. It could be on Zoom, it could be in person. We like to see people to meet people where they are and talk to them more about all of the different types of scams there are. Because if anything is happening in society, there's a fraud for it, and we like to be able to let the public know about it.
And we've talked about how fraud affects not just individuals, but also their families and caregivers. And should caregivers and family members pay more attention to the family members that are enrolled in Medicare because of the sophistication of this type of fraud? Should they be a little bit more proactive?
Well, absolutely. Because many times what happens is that, you might have somebody who's at home. They call on the phone incessantly, and they, like I said, they're very practiced people, these scam artists, and they might start calling and make themselves pass by, you know, as if they were their doctor's offices. And that's the other thing. There's a scam with your caller ID. So many times these people have the ability to switch the name of what appears on your caller ID, and you might think you're talking to your doctor's office, and they start asking you for information, and if you don't know any better, or if you're not, and it's not even if you don't know any better, you're just not thinking about it because you're thinking you're talking to your doctor's office. And why would you be giving your doctor's office different information when they already have it? So we have to be very, very careful about who we're speaking with. And I would even advise, when people call and leave a message, or even, you know, sometimes they put links on your phone or on your computer, never click on those links and never call back the number that they're giving you, because you're calling or you're contacting the scam artist wherever they're asking you to. The best thing to do is use the number that you know. So if it's your doctor, go to a bill that he might have sent you, or the card, the appointment card that they gave you. That's the number you should be calling. And if somebody calls you and you're not sure, you know, if somebody is calling you, you can very well say, you know, I will call you right back, and hang up. Don't call the number that they're calling from or that they give you. Use the number that you know, and then you can have a conversation where you're confident of who you're speaking with. In many occasions, we've had the example where people have called from, you know, and then they, when they call their doctor's office, they'll say, we have not called you. So it's very, very important to be very conscious who it is that we're giving the information to. And so that would be the best way to prevent a person from being defrauded.
That's Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of the New York Statewide Senior Action Council. For more information or to report suspected Medicare fraud, you can call the Senior Medicare Patrol's toll-free helpline. It's 1-800-333-4374 or visit nyseniors.org. Maria, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, get ready to kick up your boots this Sunday. It's Kerhonky Tonkin in the field in Kerhonkson. We'll hear from Andrea Maddox of Andrea Maddox and the Hey Y'alls, who's bringing Tennessee soul to the Hudson Valley. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Legendary soccer player Abby Wambach remembers exactly what was going on in her mind at a crucial moment during the 2011 World Cup.
As soon as the ball came off of her foot, I knew that ball was coming to my head. The only thing in my mind was, don't screw this up.
The psychology of winning. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This Sunday, the hills of Kerhonkson come alive with the sound of some twangy guitars and the shuffle of boots on the dance floor. Kerhonky Tonkin' in the Field is an afternoon of live honky-tonk barbecue and country charm. Among the performers is Andrea Maddox, frontwoman of Andrea Maddox and the Hey Y'alls, a six-piece Americana band based in the Hudson Valley. With some roots in Tennessee, Andrea brings a modern spin to country classics with songs full of heart, wit, and some danceable melodies. Let's hear one of those. This is from Long Drive Home. And Andrea is joining us now. Andrea, is it appropriate for me to say, hey, y'all?
Hey, y'all.
Let's talk about what folks could expect at Kerhonky Tonkin' in the Field this Sunday. What makes this event special for you personally as well?
Oh, this is so exciting. Well, first of all, it looks like it's not going to be raining.
Yay.
That's really exciting. And it's going to be pretty warm. So it's going to be a beautiful late spring day out in a field. Behind the Outpost Barbecue in Kerhonkson, which I don't know if you've been there, but there's this gorgeous field behind the restaurant that sits right on 209. And Dennis Ballantyne, the owner there, has built a stage and a dance floor. And he's got these picnic tables, and it's just this really idyllic scene. And we've got two bands, my band and Bourbon Sprawl. And we have a local young Kerhonkson country singer who's going to start out the day with some of his original music.
And is that Louis DeGroat?
That's Louis DeGroat.
You're also performing alongside Bourbon Sprawl. I like that name. How did this lineup come together?
Well, Bourbon Sprawl and my band, we play all around kind of the same venues. And actually, Ezra, who is one of the members of Bourbon Sprawl, our kids went to school together. So we knew each other, you know, peripherally in that scene. And when we realized we were playing the same venues and playing the same music, we decided to do a double bill together. We have a lot of similar fans, similar dancers who come to both of our gigs. So we said, let's do this gig out in a field and it'll be amazing.
Well, dancing outside, barbecue and beer, it sounds like a honky-tonk dream.
Yeah.
For those who are not familiar with your music or haven't seen Andrea Maddox and the Hey Y'alls before, what kind of energy do you bring to the stage? How do you describe it?
Oh, it's super lively. We have lots of really fun two-stepping songs. So if you do any kind of partner dancing, it's all translatable. Two-stepping is really basically doing two steps to the right and one step back, or some people call it quick, quick, slow, slow. But it's a real simple step, and the turns are the same that you do in salsa and cumbia and any kind of ballroom dancing. All the turns are the same, the spins and things. But there's lots of dancers who come to our shows, and everyone wants everyone to dance. So it's not uncommon for a seasoned dancer to grab somebody from the audience that wants to learn and teach them how to dance, because it's just, you see so much joy and energy in the people dancing, and it's contagious. You want to be a part of it.
Your songs have been described as coming from your, quote, twisted heart and with a, quote, wink in your eye. Can you talk about the balance you strike between humor and heartbreak and then honesty in your music?
Well, you know, writing songs is a way of expressing myself and expressing my experience. And I grew up in Tennessee singing and playing bluegrass and listening to Loretta Lynn and Patsy Cline and all of these amazing women. And, you know, as I've gotten older, I've noticed that there's not a huge female representation in music, period. More a little now, but I enjoy being able to connect with the women in my audiences through telling our story, because I feel like my experience is relatable to many other women, and I try to combine the humor of life with the longing and the passion and the heartbreak.
The Hudson Valley, well, it's not exactly Nashville, but there's a real Americana country scene here. How has that the region have influenced your sound here?
Well, you know, it's funny. I didn't really like country music when I was growing up in Tennessee. And, as I've grown as a songwriter, I discovered that the music that really gets to me, that really speaks to me and that I want to play is country music. It's the music I grew up with. And so I bring that here to the Hudson Valley, and, I see that it's relatable to everybody. There's a huge boom in country music all over the state because it is relatable on so many levels. I don't know why, but the steel guitar, everybody loves the steel guitar. It has a very, I don't know, a certain twang that I think maybe just kind of sounds like sorrow and loneliness that people can connect to. And also the fiddle has been described as an instrument that kind of pulls out that deep, I don't know, pain and sorrow and joy. So all of these, I don't know, all the instruments and all the sounds, everyone seems to be getting on the Americana vibe these days.
Well, and if you grew up
I think, I was just going to say, and dancing is becoming more popular all over. I think people are, you know, realizing what a connection it is for people to be able to come together and to touch strangers and dance and, you know, just be together in a way that's kind of no pressure and fun and
it's just so exciting.
Well, and also with this particular, you know, honky-tonking in the field, being outside and just enjoying nature and where you live in the country in the Hudson Valley is also part of that, too. And I guess if you grew up with Patsy Cline or Loretta Lynn or any of those other great Southern singers, they kind of are in your bones there a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And also, like, in the South, it's very common for there to be outdoor dances. Mm-hmm. You know, the weather is definitely better for that. But, you know, in Louisiana and in Tennessee and all these places, people are having dances outside because why not? It's so amazing.
Well, for folks thinking of coming out and being outside and honky-tonking in the field, where can they get more information about the whole event?
You can go to my Instagram, Andrea Maddox and the Hayalls. There's information. There's some posts on there about it. You could call the restaurant. And basically, if you are in Kerhonkson or if you're planning to come, if you bring a blanket or a lawn chair and $10, you can get in at 4 o'clock and watch two bands and Louie opening for us and drink beer and eat barbecue and have an amazing time.
Sounds like a Sunday. What's next for you and the Hey Y'alls after this event? Any other summer shows or new recordings in the work? What's coming up next?
Yes, all of that. The next big one is that we're doing a honky tonk prom in Castleton on Hudson at Stablegate Winery, and that's open to the public. Let's see, you can find information for that on my Instagram page as well. Or you can go to Stablegate Winery, and look on their page, but, there's going to be vintage market, vendors there. There's going to be tarot readings. There's going to be a prom king and queen. We're asking everybody to, you know, put on your best and come out and, we're going to be headlining that event as well.
All right, that's Andrea Maddox of Andrea Maddox and the Hey Y'alls. They are performing this Sunday at Kerhonky Tonkin' in the Field. Again, Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. It sounds like a great time. And I think I can't resist going out on one of your tracks from your EP, Long Drive Home, Dance to the Radio. How's that?
Oh, great. I love that one. All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
Fun talking to you.
Thanks.
I hope to see you Sunday.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'm trying to get this to get up here for us so we can hear a little bit of Dance at the Radio, but we will having a little tech difficulties, but yeah, check it out at Andrea's website and also on Spotify. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, we'll take a break, and if honky-tonking isn't your style or speed, we've got some electronic funk music coming up this weekend in Parksville. It's the First Friday Foundation of Funk event that's coming up. We'll learn more about that after this. It's Radio Chatskill.
I'm Bill Williams. If you missed my interview with Jody D'Agostini and Andy Williams from the recovery organization Community in Crisis on the Kingfisher Project this week, don't worry. You can hear our full extended conversation on the Kingfisher podcast. Just go to wjffradio.org and look for podcasts under the shows tab. While you're there, check out all of the great local podcasts we have for you. That's the Kingfisher Project Podcast at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we walk through the gate of summer by visiting three cooks in three very different parts of the country to see what June tastes like for them. We'll hear about the shrimp of coastal Georgia, the salmon of Alaska, the preserves of Appalachia, and more. Coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This week's Retro Cocktail Hour is chock full of exotic sounds by the What It Do Archive Group, Martin Denny, and the Manicouras. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Joining us now are Lonnie Sciandra, also known as DJ Catsilk, a longtime community DJ, self-taught fabric sculptor, and dedicated advocate, and Mark Partridge, who performs his ambient barn. You can hear his music here on Radio Catskill Friday nights at midnight. They're bringing immersive synth-driven soundscapes to life at the first Friday of Funk event at New Memories in Parksville. They usually host the Foundation of Funk monthly dance party, but here's something new. We're going to talk a little bit about it. Hi, guys.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Let's talk a little bit about this first Friday of Funk event happening June 6th. That's coming up at New Memories. How did this collaboration come together between you two and the other artists? Lonnie, you want to take the lead here?
Sure, yeah. About a year ago, my daughter and I and a friend, Leslie Abad, we threw a party called Pork Fried Nice. And that kind of was the initial spark. I met Mark that night, and he just loved the music so much. So we connected, and we decided in the early fall to start a regular party at the old foundation, which we've been going at for 10 parties now. We're going strong.
And the event Friday features three rooms with very different musical styles: down-tempo, synth, dance. Mark, your synth boxer room is a highlight. Can you describe what that is and what people can expect?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think the idea for this party was to kind of bring an old school kind of club vibe to New Memories, which is a space that we love and support out in Parksville. And they do these first Fridays where they just kind of, you know, they're always making space for artists and creators. So we're just kind of doing a takeover, and Lonnie and I were brainstorming, and we thought that it would be really cool to kind of break out and to do sort of three different vibes. So the synth room is sort of near and dear to my heart. We have a bunch of really cool artists coming, from the other side of, well, actually from the Hudson Valley, to play, you know, kind of like almost like modular DJing, but instead of DJing with like sort of a traditional controller, they use synthesizers and hardware and drum machines. And I think the vibe in that room is going to be maybe a little darker, a little bit more thumping, a little bit more kind of techno-y. And then we have Lonnie's room, which is like, you know, kind of the big, beautiful dance room with house music and old school DJs. And then the down-tempo game room out in front where all the cool, large, inflatable and fabric sculptures are going to be.
There's something for everyone. Now, Foundation of Funk, which you mentioned, that's kind of become a staple in the upstate dance scene, I think, after just not being, you know, just starting relatively recently. How do you guys balance bringing the diverse sounds while keeping that vibe going?
There's just so much damn good music to play to share with the community. We have an amazing dance community that's been resurrected through these months, and they are dedicated dancers. So they're like our core movers and shakers. And so we've got people coming in and out. It's a multi-generational party. We've got 20-somethings to 70-somethings rocking out on the dance floor. And it's very open and free and raw. It feels just a nice dark room with enough fog to keep you inspired and going. And yeah, it's a really good boogie. And for those who want a late night thing, this is the first time we've been able to do something like that, at least in the 23 years I've lived in Sullivan County.
We could all use a good boogie right now, I think.
Yeah.
Lonnie, you're known for your, sure. I mentioned you're a fabric artist, fabric sculptor. I mentioned that because you use that as inspiration too. Talk a little bit about how that inspires your sets and you know, your artistic style.
Actually, it's actually not, I'm not a fabric artist. That's actually Josh Lee.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. We're bringing him in. So we decided we want to have this multi-genre experience and have a down-tempo room where people can chill and play games. But then we thought, because we know Josh Lee, his work is so incredible, and he has inflatables and this really like cosmic, psychedelic, strange textile art that he will be filling the space with. So he's the chosen artist that we wanted to spotlight and kind of bring him into our playground.
You're bringing him in. You're bringing some others in too. Can you talk about some of the other folks who are going to be performing?
Yeah, I could talk about the DJs.
I'd like to hear that.
In the down tempo game room, which is when you first enter the space, We're going to have a local legend, Selector Starkey, yeah. who's been playing old school sessions on your station for 22 years.
Yeah.
He's been a bit of a, he's an icon, and we've never met in person, but we've become friends through the digital realm, and I'm looking forward to meeting him. He's been a real guide, and we share music. He's just so inspiring. I can't wait to play with him and be, you know, combine forces. He can never play on a Saturday because you have him.
Right.
So this was finally an opportunity to get that guy involved with us. So super hype about that. The other thing I'm excited about is Adrian Picciano, who you know from way back WJFF days. She has been gearing up to have her first gig. She's been practicing. She bought her gear, and I've been kind of nudging her along, and I thought this was the perfect opportunity to bring her in. So she's in the same room as Starkey. They're going to be playing back-to-back, down-tempo, like ambient funk, maybe a little bit of disco, some and I have a little blurb here from her. I don't know, Tim, do you mind reading it? Because I feel a little funny reading it.
Oh, well, I have to pull it up. Go ahead. And
Mark, you read it.
Yeah, Mark, do you have it?
No, I don't have it in front of me either.
Okay.
Well, oh, dang. Okay.
It's going to be great.
I'll just tell you real quick. She's basically going to be playing like house, Afro, disco, soul, hip hop, desert blues. And she very much rates Starkey as well. So she's super excited about that collaboration.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that like having Selector Starkey there is like a cool thing. He doesn't get out there to do it because he's doing like the 4 hours here on Saturday nights with Chucks. And so it's cool to have that. Adrian coming back in and doing more of her DJ stuff, resurrecting that as well. How do you guys, you know, collaborate with other local DJs and support, you know, these folks are more established and not necessarily emerging, but like, you know, out there in the scene and the region, how does that work in for you guys in terms of collaboration, mentorship as well, Mark?
Yeah. To kind of go back to what Lonnie was saying about, you know, how this, the foundation of funk sort of sparked about parties ago. I think that, like, there was definitely some white space there to fill. And, you know, there are so many pockets of cool artistic people around our area. And I feel like the foundation of funk was sort of like a lighthouse, almost like a beacon, you know, to be like, hey, come out, come see what's going on. You know, and it's brought a bunch of creators, a bunch of music makers out of the woodwork. It's definitely endeared us to the dance community. And we're just excited to, like, you know, meet new folks and collaborate more. I think that's what's one of the cool things about this Friday, that, you know, the foundation parties are great, but they're much more contained. I think New Memories is kind of amazing because, you know, we get to expand and we get to collaborate. You know, all these guys and ladies who are coming to play with us are people that we've been trying to collaborate with for a while. And sometimes it's just, you know, you don't have the right venue, you don't have the right space, but, you know, thanks to the folks at New Memories, like, we're able to kind of put up this, this like really cool collaboration. And hopefully this will kind of spark, something else, you know, and start putting out these parties on a bit of a larger scale.
Yeah, I pulled up Adrian's quote here. She says, quote, my beautiful mentor, Lonnie, a.k.a. DJ Catsilk, has been an inspiration.
Aww.
And showed me that it's totally possible to learn a new craft at my age and that I still have something to offer to the DJ scene. So talk about mentorship, Lonnie. That's a great endorsement there from Adrian. You have a connection with another person who's there, Peter Mayer, an old family friend dating back to the San Francisco music scene of the 90s?
Yeah. So real quick with Adrian, you know, we've been friends for decades, and she's expressed this interest, and so she's asked, you know, I've been kind of just helping her work through how to do files and record box and all of the minutiae that comes with the technical side of this. She has great taste. She's been a lover of music for so long, so she's got her own style, and I've just been encouraging her to use her voice and to not, you know, to just put it out there and to have confidence, and who cares if you beat match. In my room, the main dance room, it will be the first from 6:30 to 7:45 is my old friend Peter Mayer. He was immersed in the city, in San Francisco and New York City's dynamic cultural movements of the 80s and 90s, the rise and fall of punk and post-punk club glam and the rave renaissance. He was definitely like proto raver. I met him in 96 and he was already deeply immersed in the parties that were happening over there. And he's also a classically trained violinist. He's now a textile designer and he lives full time in Kerhonkson. We've never played together. He's like an uncle to my daughter. And we love each other so much. And I just know I've seen him play. He's got such great taste. He plays like funky disco and house and, he can kind of play anything. So he's going to be opening for us. After that is going to be Jeff Barnes of Electric Mountain, whose show is on WJFF on Saturday nights from 12 to 2. I was on the last show, so that is in the archives. If anyone wanted to check out something new from me, on the WJFF archive this week. Jeff, if you know more about Jeff than I do, you want to give us a little... Tim?
I was just going to say, you know, Electric Mountain, as you said, it's the best of global dance and brings, you know, not only great local DJs like yourself, but also New York City DJs, global DJs. He is connected with, you know, a lot of folks in the New York City scene. Also, I will just say, and I don't think a lot of people get to say this at nonprofits, he's on our board.
Nice.
He's on our board of trustees.
He's
so
a busy boy.
We have a cool, we have a cool board if you got like the electric DJ Jeff Barnes there. So he's going to be there too. Let's remind folks where they can get more information and details about First Friday of Funk at New Memories coming up this Friday.
Sorry, what was the question?
let's give more details. Where can folks get more information?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you can find information at either on the New Memories Instagram feed or our party feed is called The Foundation of Funk, all one word. You can find wherever, you know, whenever we're playing. We've got another Foundation of Funk coming up next Saturday, our regular monthly at Old Foundation on the 14th. So if you missed this one, you can check us out on the 14th when we'll have our other resident DJ with us, Uma, my daughter. She's Uma DJ. She's a pretty successful international DJ now. She's kind of intermittently playing with us because she's otherwise doing tours in the South Pacific, or she's heading off to San Francisco and LA this weekend to play. So she will be with us next Saturday, but unfortunately won't be able to play with us this Friday.
Well, it's so great. I just want to say on a personal note, having, you know, you said you've been here for over 20 years, Lani, and seeing Uma grow up, and now she's this international DJ. It's so, like, I feel like a proud friend as well. So I can only imagine how proud mom feels.
Hey,
the
village to raise that girl.
Yeah. So, Mark, anything else for you coming up? Or Lani, anything else you want to talk about that's coming up for you guys after these Foundation of Funk things besides your, you know, Mark Ambient Barn?
Just Ambient Barn Radio Show, Friday nights at midnight. Keep an eye out for that. Taking the deep dives into the world of electronic music. I am actually starting a big film project coming up here shortly. I just got a money through the DVAA for it. So just like diving into all kinds of new creativity. I have a couple new live scores, which I'm going to be working on over the next couple of months. And then just keeping these parties up and running, man. Like, we're just here for the community, here to make music, and here to, like, make people happy, give them a space to come and express themselves.
Well, so fun. We were talking before you guys to Andrea Maddox about a honky-tonk thing they're doing at Kerhonkson this Sunday, and it's outdoors, and she was talking about getting together and just dancing as a community, the same kind of thing, indoors, community, dancing, just shake it off, have some fun. Thank you so much, Mark Parkridge, a.k.a. Ambient Barn, and Lani Skander, a.k.a. DJ Cat Silk, for being here and for bringing the funk.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Tim.
Thanks, guys. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, I'm Tim Bruno, General Manager at Radio Catskill. This Thursday, it's NEPA Gives, and we need you to be a part of this 24-hour online giving event. Your donation helps keep trusted news, diverse voices, and local culture on the air for everyone. Now more than ever, your support makes a difference.
Donate at nepagives.org starting at 7 Thursday. We are navigating uncertainty with the strength of our community behind us. Donate at nepagives.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Warm and sunny, high near 84 today. There's an air quality alert in effect until 11 o'clock this evening. Air quality levels in outdoor air are predicted to be bad because of some of those wildfires coming from the Canadian side. Do take caution.